Hey everybody, Paul Douglas Boyer here for Mad Money Machine Show 164 for beginning of August 2009. Coming up on this episode, I'm going to talk tech and talking a little bit about the upcoming Google operating system and the Mac tablet. Talk about golf, and I'm going to talk about one of the most misunderstood rules of golf that I see incorrectly applied so many times. I'm going to try to straighten you out. I'm going to talk a little bit about why the stock market has gone up since March 9th. And I've got some other odds and ends to throw in on episode 164 of this, the Mad Money Machine. So the Google Chrome operating system was announced a little over a month ago, I believe. Not everybody knows what it is. Well, you know what an operating system is. You know, Microsoft Windows, you know about that. Apple computers have their own operating system. Well, Google wants to get into the business of providing the windowing environment that runs on a computer. And I think the idea is that more and more people are buying these netbook-type computers, these tiny little laptops, or perhaps tablet computers with no keyboard, and they just need a very small, very efficient windowing system, operating system, to run on that computer. And I think Google wants to get into the business because, you know, for every computer that you buy new, you pay a little bit of a tax to Microsoft if it's a PC, and of course Apple. They're no cheap computers to buy. I believe if you get a computer with the Google OS on it, it's going to be pretty inexpensive. I can imagine a netbook being $400, maybe even $200 running the Google Chrome operating system, with the price of Google software these days being free mostly. What would run on a Google operating system? Well, certainly the Google applications, their Gmail and their calendar and contacts lists, the Google Docs, just like the word processor, the spreadsheet, and all those applications. I'm sure they would optimize the Google OS to run all of their own software. It wouldn't need to support a big range of hardware, I wouldn't think. I mean, a keyboard, plug-in keyboard, maybe a plug-in mouse, you know. Does it need to drive an external display? Well, it certainly needs to get on the network somehow, but it'll have its own built-in network connections. Maybe it'll even have a, what do they call it? Not the Wi-Fi, but the one beyond that. I forget the name of it. MaxWi or something. MaxFi. MaxFly. Speaking of MaxFly, the golf brand, since we've last talked and Tiger Woods didn't make the cut in the British Open, he's won two tournaments in a row. And of course, I'll be watching the PGA Championship tournament this weekend at Hazeltine. Is it Hazeltine or Hazeltine? I guess we'll find out soon enough. Up in Minnesota is where that is. You see, the golf tournaments move north in the heat of August, and Minnesota is up there. Should be nice weather for the guys golfing. There is an application for the iPhone that's the PGA Championship Tracker. The previous tournaments, the previous majors, Masters, I know for sure had a application that ran on the iPhone. You download it, install it. It was free. And it would give you video updates and certainly score updates and things for the tournament. This one's $1.99. And there's an advertisement in the application. So I'm wondering, wow, I guess they're getting a little bit of their money back for the development costs of making this thing. I bought it. Yeah, $1.99. I'm a sucker for it. I guess I would have bought a magazine, and the magazine would have been $4 or something or more. If you buy one at the tournament, of course, it would be $20 or $25 to buy their little program. So I got the $1.99 application for the iPhone that tracks the PGA Championship. And we'll see whether Tiger Woods can pull off another victory. This victory yesterday, Sunday, coming to you on Monday, August 10th, was something else. The 16th hole, what was it, over water. Was it a par 5? I believe it was. Par 5. He, what, he hit his drive into the sand trap, then he hit out of the sand trap into the fairway, and then his next shot to the green over the water with a 7-iron launched up into the air and dropped down kick-in range for a birdie. And Padraig Harrington, of course, he was also in a sand trap, but getting out of the sand trap, he got into the rough. And from the rough, he went into the rough behind the green. And from there, disaster struck as he tried to lob wedge a ball up and out of that thick rough onto the green. He completely sculled it, went right into the water. He had to go all the way back across the water, hit his next shot, which again went into the rough behind the green, and he had to chip and then putt, and basically got a triple bogey on that hole and lost the championship right there, lost the event right there. It was tough to see if you're a Padraig Harrington fan. Padraig Harrington won the PGA Championship last year. Of course, he'll be competing in it again this year. I don't know if he'll be paired with Tiger Woods in the early rounds. It'll be interesting to see what the pairings are. But there is a rule of golf that a lot of guys misunderstand. And it has to do with losing your ball somewhere. And you play a golf course, you hit your ball into the woods. What do you do next? First of all, if you can hit it out of the woods, fine. Hit it out of the woods. A lot of times, though, what's happening in these golf courses, in our area at least, is the woods are so darn thick, they go ahead and put red stakes all down the side of the woods, meaning a lateral water hazard. Okay. And so what do you do when your ball goes into one of these hazard areas? Well, you can, if you want, try to hit it out of the hazard. A yellow stake, by the way, is a pure water hazard. Typically, a pond in front of a green would be a pure water hazard, marked by yellow stakes or yellow lines. A waterway adjoining the side of a fairway is typically marked with red stakes, and that's a lateral hazard. Of course, white stakes means out of bounds, and you're completely out of luck. You can't hit it from out of bounds. But you can try to hit it from a hazard. And if you do, there are certain rules of things you can't do that you could do otherwise. You can't ground your club in a hazard. You can't move certain things in a hazard and so forth. But the point I'm trying to get to is, what if you don't want to play your ball from the hazard? Where do you put it? In a water hazard, in a yellow staked area, you can hit it from where you hit it before. So if you're on a par 3 or something, and you hit your ball into the water hazard from the tee, you can take a penalty stroke and tee up another one. It's just that simple. Or you can drop a ball on a line between the hole and where it went into the hazard, backwards, away from the hole. Okay? And this is where a lot of guys get mixed up. And the same is true on a lateral hazard, by the way. If your ball goes into a lateral hazard, you mark where it went into the hazard, where it crossed the line of the hazard. And for most lateral hazards, they have this same rule that you can drop it on a point between the hole and where it crossed the lateral hazard. But because it's a lateral hazard, you can't drop it backwards. I mean, you'd still be in the hazard. So they have this extra rule for a lateral hazard that says you can move 2 club lengths away from that point, no nearer the hole, and drop your ball there. So that's the difference between a lateral hazard and just a pure water hazard, is in the water hazard, you move backwards from the hole. You can't move just two club lengths away from the point that it entered the water hazard. What a lot of guys seem to think that you can do on a lateral hazard is you move it back on the line from where it went in to the hazard. Let's say you're hitting from a tee and you slice it over to the right and it goes into the hazard. A lot of guys think, okay, it went in here. I'm going to move backwards from this point towards the tee where I hit it and drop a ball. No, that's not right. That is not the way the rule works. There is more to it than what I've given you. To find out more, go to rulesofgolf.com and read Rule 26, I believe it is. I'm going from memory on hazards and lateral hazards. Well, on Friday, I went out to our local driving range. Not a very good driving range, but they give you a whole lot of balls for $10, which to my detriment. I say not a good driving range because the targets aren't very good and the mats are a very thin piece of green paint, basically, on top of concrete. And I'm joking, of course. There is a little bit of AstroTurf, worn thin over time. It's placed on top of a concrete pad. And what I was trying to do on this particular day was figure out a way to hit my driver straight. Because it just doesn't go straight. I got a driver off eBay. Got the Ping Rapture, blah, blah, blah. And it's the one I hit in Myrtle Beach, matter of fact, I told you about. Only instead of the stiff shaft, I got a regular shaft. Well, I can hit it long, but rarely straight. And I wanted to try to see if there was a swing move I could make, or a stance, or a grip alignment, or a swing pattern, you know, tuck the right elbow in, so I could make consistent contact on the ball. At least it would go in one direction pretty regularly. You know, I mean, if I could fade it every time, then I'll just aim left. But no, I'd pull it, or fade it, or slice it, or even hook it, depending on the adjustments I was making. Beating ball after ball after ball after ball in this bucket. And so I finally decided, all right, I'm going to set this thing down and just try to hit 3-wood. And I hit the 3-wood. Remember in Myrtle Beach I told you that the driver went the same, the 3-wood went the same as my old driver, and even the new driver, the 3-wood went the same. Well, on this concrete mat, concrete-supported mat, the 3-wood, right off the mat, not even teeing it up, went straight and right at the 250-yard flag. Now, I don't know if these are limited flight balls. I'm going to assume that these are limited flight range balls. All right. Yeah, sure, sure. So it's both comforting and disheartening to know that the 3-wood goes the same distance, but it goes so much straighter. I mean, 3 straight shots straight at the stupid flag, whereas the driver, you just couldn't keep control of it at all. Now, I went on the web and I did a search for 3-wood versus driver, and there was one article that says, keep your driver at home, just hit your 3-wood down the fairway, you'll be a whole lot better off. And in the tournament I played in a month or so ago, that I came in third net, I did do that. And even from the back tees, I used a 3-wood off the tee and hit a lot of shots into the fairway, and it works out. I don't know. And I notice on the watching the TV golf tournaments, Tiger Woods hits his driver off the fairway a lot. And when it really matters for him to get it in the fairway, he does get out the fairway medal, either the 3-wood or 5-wood or what have you. Well, in doing so, I was thinking, well, maybe it's the fact that the ball is coming off the mat. That's what's causing it to go so much straighter. So I'm going to tee one off with my driver off the mat. And this big-headed driver thing, you know, trying to hit that little ball off of the mat. I took a big wind-up, hit down on that mat with the driver, and boing! It was like a guitar string snapped in my back. And I thought, oh. And oh no, is what I thought. Because 6 or so years ago, I had a lot of back trouble. Get to the point where you can't hardly walk. And sure enough, I had to put the clubs away and give the rest of my bucket of balls to somebody else, because that was a back injury for sure. Saturday then, hobbling around, get to the point where it's very painful in certain situations. I'm hoping that I'm back in shape at least by Wednesday. I got a golf event coming up on Wednesday that I want to go to. I told the guys that they asked me, are you going to be able to golf on Wednesday? I said, well, if I'm not, at least I'll get out there and look like Arnold Palmer the way he swings it. Oh, boy. But the tournament I did play in last week, I came in second place net. I have you know. I'm very proud of that. I shot an 83 with my 16 handicap. Came in at a 67. Now, the person that won low net, she was a 30 handicapper. Shot a 94 for a net 64. That's a pretty good round. Friend of mine that I'm going golfing with on Wednesday held a party this past Saturday at a really cool place near Washington, D.C., actually in Maryland, but near D.C., called Glen Echo Park. Glen Echo Park. It was an old amusement park, and by old, I mean 1890s is when this thing was established. And then back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it was a thriving amusement park. Had a roller coaster. It was one of the first places in the world, apparently, to have a Dodge'em car track. Various other rides, had the crystal pool, a big swimming pool with sand around the outside of it and everything. They've got old pictures there. In the 40s and 50s, they updated the look of some of the buildings in an Art Deco style, and that style still exists on those buildings, even though some of them are no longer used, but some of them are still used for various art facilities. For example, there's a potter. There is a calligrapher. There are other artists that have residence there. And the one that my friend took us to was a glass blower. See, he was taking a glass blowing class with this guy. His name was Paul, also, at Glen Echo Park. He's got a small studio there in an old stone building with a furnace that has molten glass in the furnace, and it's heated to 2,000 degrees with propane, and it's always on, always going. Talk about green. He says you can't turn it off because it takes 5 days to get it back up to 2,000 degrees, and he needs to work. Well, he held some demonstrations. First, he made a big glass mug, 32-ounce mug he was making. It had a fluted outside, had a nice big thick handle on it, and he showed us how he did all that with the rim and the base and the handle and everything. And as the last moment, he was going to put it back in the glory hole, a secondary furnace that he uses to touch up the glass, put it in there, and it shattered right during the demonstrations. He was able to pull out just a blob of glass and discard that one. Then he made a trophy. A second place golf trophy. It was supposed to be designed to look kind of cruddy. He made it out of a mottled gray and crackled look and had these really nice handles on each side, dual handles. And then again at the last stage, it broke right off the pole and onto the floor. And the stem was broken. So he placed the goblet right on the foot and said, now there, that looks like a second place trophy, doesn't it? And they put it in the cooler to get it warmed down overnight. So, but it was a lot of fun watching him and the glass blowing at Glen Echo Park. If you're ever in the area, I recommend taking a look at Glen Echo Park. Go look around at some of the old buildings and things and then go see some of the artisans there. A weekend, it's probably a thriving time to go to Glen Echo Park. Last thing I want to talk about is the stock market. Crazy, crazy stock markets. Ever since March the 9th, it's been rocketing upward like the second wave of a roller coaster. Up and up and up, up, up and away. What explains this? Is it the economy is doing so much greater? Everyone's expecting the economy to do so great? Well, let me ask you a question. If the stock market is a predictor of future events, why did it reach an all-time peak in October of 2007? Why wasn't it already on a way down by October of 2007 when the recession started in December? Why didn't it predict the recession that had started in December? Why wasn't it a year, you know, ahead of this recession that it would have seen coming? And why is the stock market going up right now as we speak? I think it has less to do with fundamentals, less to do with PE ratio, less to do with earnings, less to do with the future outlook of the economy than it has to do with the supply of money. I think, yes, I really think that the stock market is going up because of inflation. I think it's really that simple. I think the stock market might be the leading inflation indicator of prices. So, you know, consumer prices may go up at some point. Gold may go up at some point. But I think the most liquid market of all is the stock market. And I think that's why we're seeing market prices rise, is because all of this cash that's been generated and given to all the big banks, what are the banks going to do with the money? Especially the investment banks. They're going to buy stocks. They're going to buy companies, shares of companies with it, and they're therefore increasing the demand. Therefore, the prices of the stocks are going to be rising. So, I guess it's not good enough to follow Cramer and follow and do research on each individual company. You know, is this little company doing better than this little company? I think that's all just a bunch of nonsense. It's noise in the system compared to the macroeconomic view of how much cash is there in the world and where is the cash sloshing back and forth to and from. You know, all the things that we buy that go to China, all the money that we buy for things coming from China. The Chinese have to do something with their money. Are they buying stocks with the money, the cash that they're getting? You know, maybe that's why the stock market has gone up. So I don't know. I can't read those giant tea leaves of the macroeconomic forecasts, but it sure feels to me like we're in another bubble, a stock market bubble. And we've seen bubbles pop, and they don't look pretty after they pop. We saw one pop last November. A lot of people are portending bad things for this coming September, October, November time frame, one of which is the stock market. But there are many other things that they are pretending that are bad. And it's going to be interesting times. I hope we make it through unscathed this fall. So good luck to you and yours. Be prepared. So the Mac tablet, we're talking about coming out with a Macintosh tablet computer. I had predicted this, I think, for last year. Or was it the year before? Yes, I think it was the year before. Well, I guess they're waiting just to get it just exactly right. What is it that you'd want to see in a tablet? You know, a larger form factor, basically a larger form factor iPhone, I think is what it would be. The problem with the iPhone, if I might indicate that there is a problem, is yes, the screen is just a little bit too small to do web surfing on. You need a bigger screen to surf the web on. But do you all? You don't really need a keyboard, do you? I mean, if you're going to just pick a bookmark, you just click, click, and pick the bookmark like you would on an iPhone. Or you could have it just like on the iPhone, you have a pop-up touch screen type thing where you type in the address of the website that you want to get to. You really don't need a whole lot more, I don't think, on a tablet computer. You need to be able to surf the web. You need to be able to watch videos. Maybe you need to be able to pop in a DVD, or even better, just get online videos on the thing. You know, an iPhone doesn't have a DVD player, a reader on it. So they're talking about maybe in September, November, October, November timeframe, Apple might announce this tablet computer. Everyone's predicting it'll be a touch screen. It'll have Wi-Fi capabilities, but they don't know if it's going to have a phone or not. You know, it should, because if you take your tablet into the car, you still want to get on the internet. And so it should be 3G connected, just like the iPhone is. You shouldn't have to rely on a hotspot for a Wi-Fi hotspot in order to get on the internet with that. But if it has a phone in it, can you make phone calls? And how would that work, holding this big thing laptop-sized screen up to your ear. Obviously, that wouldn't work. So would it come with a Bluetooth headset? You know, you stick the tablet in your backpack or in your briefcase, and you have the Bluetooth headset then to make calls with through the tablet phone now. Or perhaps it has a speakerphone on it. So you just sit it down on the tabletop and you start dialing, and you can make calls through it on the speakerphone. Well, we'll be looking for that. I'm looking forward to it. Now, speaking of the iPhone, I had it on my agenda to write a couple of iPhone applications this summer. And now I can tell you about what they are. The first one I had the idea of writing was a Safe Sun timer. And I did a little market research and realized, yeah, nobody would want it. But what the idea behind it would be, and it could get pretty elaborate, the idea behind it would be is, you know, depending on your skin type and the latitude and the UV index of that particular day, how long can you stay out in the sun without getting a sunburn? And you just start the application. You start it up and it beeps or goes off after a while after it says, hey, you better seek shade. And maybe you could enter in the SPF factor of any sun protection that you have on or whatever. And it would know your GPS position, so it would know where you are and what latitude is. And it might even be able to contact the weather service to say, what is the UV factor for today? I mean, is it cloudy? Is it dark? So it would compute the latitude and the UV factor. And then you could type in perhaps your skin type. Are you very fair or medium or dark skinned? And how does that make a difference on the amount of sun exposure that you can get? Well, like I said, after doing some market research, decided nobody really would be interested in it anyway. So the next idea we had was the Dead or Alive application. This is like a little, it could be a trivia game or it could just generally be a lookup to find out, is that guy dead or alive? You know, you'd type in, Ed McMahon, dead or alive? Well, he died, you know, of course, a couple months ago, right around the time of Michael Jackson. Or it could be a trivia game where it pops up a name of someone. I think, for example, Gene Wilder, dead or alive? The guy that played Willy Wonka, he dead or alive? Of course, you'd have to throw in some living people to make it interesting. Pete Rose, you know, dead or alive? Well, it turns out I did a search in the Apple iPhone App Store, and there's an application called Alive or Dead for 99 cents. It does just about exactly the same thing. They show in their example screen, Johnny Bench, is he alive or dead? Well, so I'm not going to write that iPhone application. The application market is getting a lot more crowded these days. Sure would have been great to get in early on that. Maybe it's time to get in early on the Apple tablet application writing game. We'll see how that goes. I want to thank you for joining me again this week. I'm Paul Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes inflated stocks to make a mad money machine. I'll see you again in August sometime. Stay subscribed. And go check out the Twitter feed, twitter.com/madmoneymachine, for announcements of when the next show's coming out. Or give me a call at 571-366-7121. I think that's the number. Or email me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Those are three ways to get a hold of me. I hope you're staying cool this August. Talk to you again soon.